Are you serious? Just delirious. Are you hearing this? 'Cause it's serious. Are you serious? Hey, hello, and welcome to the Seriously Wrong podcast. We are your co-humble co-hosts, Sean and Aaron. I am Sean.
I'm Aaron. Welcome.
Welcome. We're so back.
We are so back. It's been a few weeks, and I know a lot of you out there were saying that it was so over. The podcast is over forever. I was reading this all over the place.
Yeah. But we tried to reassure you the way that we could through psychic connection.
Yeah.
By putting out in the universe through energy that we would return. And it seems to have worked.
It's just an inescapable rule of the universe that, you know, something happens and people think, oh, it's so over right now. But it's not. It wasn't. And we're back and we're here.
Yeah. So we're just talking about whether this is a new season of the show. Aaron pointed out that we have been calling it season 10 for more than a year and that technically we should be starting season 12 now.
Yeah, we've done multiple seasons that ended up going more than a year, quote unquote seasons. I don't know. But if you look in the podcast app, yeah, it's been season 10 for more than a year, and they were starting our 12th year.
Yeah, we started in April of 2014.
Yeah,
and now it's April of 2026. So yeah, season
2025. But
right. Yeah, you're right.
Maybe it should be season 11. I just remember thinking when we did the 10th anniversary that we should be starting season 11. Isn't that how it works? Like, you've completed 10 full years, so that would have been 10 full seasons, and you'd start at the 10th anniversary season 11. But we started season 10. I think I'm right again. It's season 12.
Well, whatever season it is, it's going to be a great one. And
right, because starting in year zero of the show would be season one. Season 11 would have started in 2024. Yeah, anyway, it doesn't matter. It's a season. It's starting. Welcome back.
So this episode, we're talking about just interesting philosophical concepts floating around that we could explore. And there's a sort of a standout meme over the last couple of years, the it's so over, we're so back meme of like this duality of these extremes. It's so over. Everything's hopeless. Everything's destroyed, damaged, and there's no hope. And then we're so back is... you know, something good happened. Like, yeah, we're so back. It's everything is great. Everything's
it's all
amazing.
Falling into place. It's going to happen. We're here. We're winning. Yeah, the duality of man, the yin and the yang of existence. It's so over. We're so back.
Yeah, it is. I love the meme. Like, actually, really, I would rarely say this about a meme, but I really like that meme. Like, it's both funny, but it's also like just philosophically interesting. And it's something that like. Thinking about it changed the way that I write a little bit. Like we were recently working on a project together, like a long form storytelling project. And one of the things that helped us kind of like break the story was, okay, well, this isn't it's so we're so back sequence, which means we need another it's so over sequence for the purposes of storytelling. It's like that jerk back and forth, like the low point to the highs, the low point to the highs, peril versus victory. And it makes for a really satisfying story.
Yeah, I remember you telling me you were watching Finding Nemo with your kid and you were like, identify, oh yeah, it's another one. It's so over moment. And then a we're so back moment. And then it's another it's so over moment. And it's just like, it's a rule or a format of storytelling that is like deeply satisfying. And I think a lot of good stories have it by default. And then I think it's also a sort of cyclical feeling that a lot of people interested in politics have a lot of the time. You know, someone bad got elected, it's so over. Something good happened, we're so back. If you pay attention to the political world, if you care about the future of our society and you're like hoping for good things to happen, then like I think you're also like experience this cycle pretty frequently. I think it also applies to different things in life. It's not just politics. It's like, you know, having a bad day or failed this class, it's so over, or I got fired from a job, it's so over, broke up with a partner, it's so over. But those it's so over moments are the prelude to being so back once again.
We now go to Professor Jenkins and Selma Jane in the Temple of Fate, where their attempt to recover the chalice of Kukul Khan and prevent the rise of the Fourth Reich has seemingly come to a premature end. That's not good.
Walls are closing in. Those spikes are going to turn us into Swiss cheese.
I'm more of a marble cheddar man or maybe feta.
And if those don't get us, then the poison snakes and spiders definitely will.
Yeah, not my idea of a island vacation.
And even if we did have the antidote, then we're sure to drown in the water that's slowly filling the room. And even if we found an air bubble, it's slowly being heated to boil us alive. Professor Jenkins, I think it really is over.
Yeah, let me think. Yeah, it might be so over for us.
Can't believe after all these adventures, all the scrapes we've gotten out of, it's finally over.
That'll mean the rise of the Fourth Reich. They'll use the chalice of Kukul Khan to enslave humanity for 10,000 years,
It's been an honor and a privilege to be your sidekick.
Well, if I was going to be flayed and burned alive with anyone, I'd pick you, Selma Jane.
I told you two to watch your step in here.
Mortimer. I thought that you escaped with all those ancient artifacts, caring only about yourself.
You said you weren't going to risk your life to save the world any longer.
Well, perhaps I won't risk my life to save the world any longer, but maybe I'll risk my life to save my friends.
A rope ladder. Ah, we're so back.
We're so back. Mortimer.
We can get the chalice and prevent the Fourth Reich.
You beautiful rogue, come here.
I knew there was a heart of gold in there. We now go to a Christian youth pastor reaching the culmination of his sermon.
But do you know who else it was so over for? Someone we all know. And what happened? We're so back.
We now go to a parent helping their child through a tough time.
Look, buddy, I know it's tough right now, and yeah, it feels so over, but you're 13, and soon you're going to feel so bad.
No,
I went through this stuff,
it's
too.
It's not helpful.
I get it. You're down bad.
Oh, you God. Know,
you took an L. This ain't it. But soon it's going to be bussin'.
Oh, my God. Stop, please.
No cap.
You're making it worse.
You're going to be so back. These things don't last.
God.
We now go to a meditation retreat, touching on some of the most profound themes of life.
So just pay attention to the cycles of our breath and how they match the cycles of the universe. Slowly breathe in, and we're so back.
We're so back.
And slowly breathe out. It's so over.
It's so over. We're so back. It's so over.
As above, so below.
We now go to the last of the Usufructian resistance, dwindling in numbers, hiding underground from the military hordes of the elite proprietarian death cult, following the burning of the Great Library of Hope.
Well, I guess that's it.
It's so over, man.
We're never coming back from this.
We should just give up.
I already have given Somebody up. Somebody wake me up when we're all dead.
We can't do it without Meredith, our leader, our hero.
Without her, we're nothing.
They killed her. They killed her in front of all of us.
Nobody can fill Meredith's shoes.
She knew what was going on. She knew how to fix this. This isn't the way it was supposed to be.
Hey, wait a sec, everyone. Look what I just found here in Meredith's old desk. A letter. It says, to be opened upon my demise.
Maybe she left a letter that can stir us to hope and fight back.
If anyone could have done it, it's Meredith. Just get the letter opener, very carefully tear this open, pull it out, and oh, paper's crumbling. It's, no. Well, I guess that's it. The letter's gone.
It's so over, man. You know, I'm an optimist, but it is straight up over.
Meredith could have spurred us to action, but she's gone, and her letter's gone.
Meredith.
I have something to say.
Oh, great. Lowly wants to contribute to the conversation.
I thought it was over. Hey, Loli, not the time.
We're kind of smug, self-centered.
Wait. Okay, yes. We don't like Loli.
For good reason.
Okay, sure. He's annoying. He doesn't contribute enough. He takes other people's food off their plates.
And out of the fridge, even if you label it.
Yeah, that was mine, Loli.
You still owe me $20, Loli.
And, you know, we only keep him around out of the awkwardness of figuring out some alternative. Yes.
I wish Loli had died instead of Meredith.
Yeah, Loli, why didn't you sacrifice yourself for Meredith?
He had the opportunity. I saw him. He ran.
We all wish Loli died instead of Meredith.
And yes, he talks too long. He doesn't pay attention to how other people are receiving him. He changes the topic in ways that make it hard for us all to stay on task. He takes other people's ideas as his own. He steals people's jokes. And he has bad breath, okay? Well, we all have bad breath sometimes. But he has it all the time. And he resists when we try to, even in a friendly way. You all know. But maybe here at our lowest moment, we should let the lowliest of us say his piece. I don't know.
It's not like you can make it any worse.
Keep it quick, Loli.
And speak up. You mumble a lot. It's hard to hear you.
And that thing you do where you click your tongue while you're thinking, that really grates, man.
And try not to quote Anchorman. You ran it into the ground at this point.
Yeah, can we just leave out movie quotes altogether, actually?
And game quotes.
Thanks, everyone. Yeah, I'll try to keep it brief. Let me just finish off this granola bar.
Chew with your mouth closed and get to the point, please.
Chew loud, man.
Just say what you gotta say.
That's my granola bar. And I just need to take a big drink of water as well. My name is Borat. My wife, my precious.
Well, just say it already, Loli. Jesus.
Go, baby. Go, just talk, go. Please. Get this over with.
Yeah, okay. Things look bad. They really do. I know what it feels like to not have hope, to feel beat down, to be left behind, to not see any way out, where you have no friends, and you're outgunned. That's the ground. We found the ground. What happened today was horrible. We're all in a glass case of emotion right now. We have to stay classy, San Diego. Meredith, she taught us so much. She always knew what to do, and Meredith would want us to build, and we have to fight for it, guys. You know, where did you find this attitude? The toilet store? If we go down, we have to go down fighting. We are not, and we never were, Meredith. You, Dareth, you're faster at throwing small objects and stuff than any, I've never seen anything like it. I mean, that's incredible. We can use that. You know, Tamara, you're really tall, and sometimes there's things that are high up that need to be reached. We're a group of people who are different, and that's what makes the library so beautiful. It's full of things that are different, and everyone has a part to play, and that's why we'll win. One second, I just got a text. What was I doing? You know, I love Lamp, okay? I love Lamp. So wipe up your tears, say goodbye to Meredith, say hello to yourselves.
Yeah!
Woo! Hey, everybody. The lowliest of us, the most annoying of us, just gave us the hope to fight on.
Lowly, 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 lowly. Lowly.
That was incredible. I was
like, Meredith, come back to life, but better.
From now on, this day will be known as Lowly's Day.
The day we decided to keep fighting.
And so, there were two battles fought that day. The first was the battle against the proprietarian militaristic hordes who decimated the beautiful libraries and killed our great leader. But the second battle was the Battle of Loli, and that was the battle we won. The battle against ourselves. Loli's slightly annoying speech changed the trajectory of the rebellion forever. And while that day it was so over, it wasn't long before we were so back. Philosophically and experientially of like the human experience, like there is something profound there in like the kind of pendulum swing of emotions, the whiplash from the bad to good to the bad to good over and over again. It's like part of the reason it's a resonant meme and part of the reason it's resonant in storytelling is this is like a universal human experience. And like it was mentioned in a previous episode, like I was just working on this municipal campaign where we elected a socialist in Vancouver at the top of the ballot in a by-election. It's thrilling. It was so back that night.
Yeah.
But getting there across the election period, the pre-election, where we were like talking to other parties, like other opposition parties about like, how do we limit candidates? Might we work together and to what degree and stuff? Through that whole journey, there was like, there was It's So Over days, and there were We're So Back days, and there were It's So Over moments, and there were We're So Back moments. And like, there was times where I was like, just privately in my head, like, fuck, they got us. It's like, and I felt, I was like, check, like they checkmated me. Like they snuck up on me.
Right.
The opposition or other parties, like they put us in a position where it's like, fuck, they got us. I don't know what I'm going to do. It's so over. And I really felt that. And then we'd do something and it would work, or something else would happen. And it would be like, oh, fuck, we're so back. Like it's, and sometimes it would happen in the same day. Like, oh, it's so over. Our data system has this issue and we can't do what we were planning to do. Like our plan didn't work. And it's like, I don't know what we're going to do. Or like someone went rogue and did something they're not supposed to do. And like they put up a poster where it's illegal to post posters and we're not sure exactly where they are. And it's like, fuck, we have to figure this out. This is a huge thing because we'll get fined. And then we figure out who it was. We talk to them. We figure out the route they went and we pull those down. And that didn't feel like, that itself doesn't feel like We're So Back. But then like something else happened. Like someone comes into the office and they're telling us something about like, oh, it was at my community center and everyone's talking about you guys, like blah, blah, blah. Like this, like, we're all voting for you. And like, they leave the office and we like look at each other like, that person's voting for us. Like, we're so back. Like that right. person in particular is like not our core base.
That doesn't look like someone who we would expect to vote for us.
Yeah. So it's really, and like where the stakes are high, and in storytelling, it's all about stakes. Like a good story has high stakes where you really feel the pressure the character's under and you're like cheering for them. And then when it's so over, it matters because you care about them and you want them to succeed. So like anywhere in life where there's stakes, you're always going to have those like kind of swings.
Yeah. It's interesting thinking about it from that like experiential point of view. Like, yeah, this is a thing that people experience when these things are happening. But like when you're looking back on a lot of these moments as a storytelling thing, like you can be like, oh, the shark's about to eat them. It's so over. But like, obviously, you know, they have a thing they can fly away from the shark, or whatever thing ends up saving them from it already exists. But like, when the bad thing is happening, I think it creates this kind of like tunnel vision sometimes where it's the only thing you can see, or like the plan that you've been planning for days or weeks or whatever falls apart and you don't have another plan ready. You don't know what else you're going to do. It's that like not being able to see a path out of the predicament that you're in that makes it feel like you're so over. The reason that like, you know, you end an episode on some cliffhanger where it seems like something horrible is about to happen. The car is about to crash into someone. And then the next episode starts with seeing like, oh, there actually is a pathway out of this. And then you can build up to another We're So Back moment. And it's like the experience of feeling like it's over comes from partially the fact that like we can only fit so much in our heads at one time. And like thinking about things from a particular angle or seeing things in a particular way or being introduced to new information or like something really bad happening, it can kind of like crowd everything else out and make it impossible to see the path out of it or the alternate direction to go in or, you know, what opportunities does this horrible thing open up to us?
Yeah. And actually, I think that's also a profound point just like in life is like when bad things happen. Not always, but usually there's opportunities that come with that. Like one place, like in our own lives, I think one place in my life in particular, I think, but for many people is like, it hurts so bad to end a relationship, even when things aren't going well. You know, sometimes people are like sobbing together about how it's ending. And like they both know, like both people know it's the right thing to do and that it's not going to work. When someone's moving away, there's some incompatibility, something happened or whatever. Yeah. And it's like those lows that come with that, in retrospect, they get so, in the rearview mirror, they get smaller and smaller and smaller until they're nothing and they're a story. They're a memory. And they're a memory that doesn't have the emotional valence that it once did. It just becomes a very matter-of-fact thing. Like, yes, me and my ex cried together in this park on this day about the fact it was over. And it hurt badly. It was like a very severe thing in my life at the time. It was the most important thing going on in my life, and everything else shrunk away to make room for it in my brain. But then, like, since then, I've had all these wonderful experiences that could only happen in that context. And I've met someone new, and I've got a child that I love, like, that I would have never, if that hadn't happened, if it hadn't been so over, it never could have been so back in this way.
Yeah.
And like, I wouldn't trade, there's like nothing in my life that I would trade for my daughter, right? Like, she's just like the most amazing, perfect, like, so proud of her, and just like, the connection we have is so special to me. And same with my partner also, obviously, but like,
yeah, it's like being so back, in a huge way.
Yeah. And then there was so much, but like, and you look at the big picture, and there was like actually so much pain and discord and nightmares come to life between, you know, being a kid and then having my kid. And it's like, I would take double in order to get this outcome. And like, yeah, the we're so back is built on this base of it's so over.
Yeah.
And there has to be something to come back from.
Yeah, there's nothing. Yeah, that's what I was just gonna say too. You can't come back from anything if it was never over. It's interesting too, like, we started talking about doing this episode a few months ago, and one of the impetuses behind it was like the American election had just happened, Donald Trump's elected, he's like doing this flurry of executive orders right at the start of his term, Pierre Poilievre, our conservative leader, is like trouncing everybody in the Canadian polls, even in local Vancouver politics, there's like, we have a completely conservative city council with like a few other members.
Yeah, and it's like a center-left city, like generally speaking, so like, even the right-wing party in Vancouver historically has done stuff that is left-wing by national standards.
Yeah, and like even our provincial election that recently happened, the NDP like almost got beaten out by a conservative party that was like way further right than like our old liberal-ish conservative party in BC. It just seemed like everything was going in this horrible sinking direction. And like, you know, if you're in America right now, the shit that Trump is doing is crazy. It's over for America in a huge way right now. And I think they're still in a big, it's over moment. But you are starting to see a few glimmers of it being back in certain places. But like, you know, sometimes things get really over in an intense way that's hard to fully come back from, or like coming back from it doesn't look like what you'd expect. I don't want to be like Pollyanna about how bad things in America can get and are getting right now. But like, yeah, just on all those things that I said, like thinking about Canadian politics specifically now, I feel like, you know, not everything is exactly the way I would want it. Our federal Social Democrat Party is doing horribly right now, but at least the Conservatives are also like have fallen off. It doesn't seem like they're going to win. Our provincial politics have shifted quite a bit. Like the Conservative Party has lost a fair amount of favor. The centrists are launching a new thing to take over there to try and push back against them. And the
Center BC, they call it.
Center BC, yeah, another new party.
So funny.
They should have stuck with BC Liberals. Just tried to rehabilitate it, but I don't know. We'll see. And yeah, we got a socialist city councilor, and things are looking really interesting for the 2026 Vancouver election. We'll see how that plays out. So like there's been some really cool things happening, and like seeing the reaction to what's happening in America in Canada has been nice. Like I feel like that conservative moment we were on the precipice of there's been a major reaction against it. And like, yeah, seeing all these big Bernie rallies in America, obviously Bernie's too old. I don't think he's ever going to be president, but he's having these huge, enormous rallies just showing there's a lot of energy out there, partially being generated by how horrible this election is. And I think there's real potential for some real we're so back moments coming off of this. And like, yeah, I just feel like in a very different place than I did when we started talking about this topic. And it just feels like kind of it's illustrative of the whole idea here.
Yeah, yeah. We were talking too about kind of like the vibe shift and the feeling that stuff was moving to the like culture was moving to the right, and like Twitter, but then also like in media, like mainstream media, like there's more.
All the social media companies were making like moves to the right, like, oh, you can
harass trans people
on Facebook, on Meta platforms now. Disney's like, oh, we're removing a trans character from this Pixar show. I don't know the details,
but I watched it with my 2-year-old. It's really good, and it's really a tragedy they pulled that out, because I also watched the storyboard on Twitter, and it's like, it's just really well done. It is I just got this like feeling in my body even talking about this of like, it is fucking sick and cowardly that those pieces of shit went back on this just because of this fucking pseudo right wing. And the one of the things I thought at the time, and partially self-soothing, is I was like, I think this rightward turn is partially an illusion, and that like the way that people vote, like people voting in Trump isn't necessarily an endorsement of what Trump actually stands for and the people that he's actually connected to. Like there's a variety on a ballot. You have this binary choice. You have the choice to come out to the polls or not. And there's all this, like, I wanted to keep grounded in this. And I think in hindsight more, I think this was correct, which is that the vibe shift of like people saying the R word again and stuff.
Right.
That like, yes, it's true that's happening or has happened to a certain degree where there's more social capital around right wing ideas. It's more acceptable in some circles, at least, to flirt with ideas that are like transphobic and anti-immigrant and stuff. We haven't, like, to a degree that we hadn't seen over the last 10 years, but also like, people are so fluid on an individual level, and they're so apolitical, and they're so low information that you can get like noise. Like noise can appear to have a pattern, and it's really only in retrospect you really understand all of it. So like, yeah, I don't know. Like it did feel kind of so over, and in some ways it still does, but in other ways it feels so back. And it's also, yeah, like you're saying too, like there's reactions to things and counter reactions and reactions to reactions. And sometimes like the will and the effort that it takes sometimes to make things so back is inspired by and fomented by it being so over.
Yeah.
And like, I think that's part of what just happened in Vancouver, where we had this really beautiful, awesome victory for a socialist and then another progressive party in this by-election, was like, there was all this pent-up feeling of the 2022 election doesn't represent us, isn't the direction the city should go. People thought they were voting for one thing and they got another thing. And there's like anger about it. And so people waited in line to vote. At some of the polling stations where we got 75% of the vote, people waited 2 or 3 hours to vote, which is like totally unprecedented in Vancouver to have lines like that. They underfunded the by-election. And like, these are people who stood in line for hours of their day to cast a vote because they thought that it mattered, and that because stuff was so over, they were willing to sacrifice something that like had value to them, which is their time, in order to make it so back.
Yeah, to do their part in helping to bring it back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just from talking to people, the people who waited, like the people who were part of that, they feel an ownership of the victory because they made that sacrifice.
Right.
In a way that's not, you don't usually see in elections where like we were doing office cleanup and people were like popping in the office just to be like, oh, great campaign and stuff like that. But also they were like, we won, like I won.
Right.
And it's like, they're not someone who volunteered, donated or anything. We didn't like, to us, we didn't have a record of them. It wasn't like, oh, this is one of the people we have to remind to vote or something. Like it's
right.
Just, and they in their mind are part of the team because they made that sacrifice. And I think that really like the part of the reason that happened is because it felt so over. And then there was this like spark of hope of like, well, if you make this sacrifice, if you do this thing, you talk to your friends about it and you make it happen, then we could be so back. So it was like, it was both the appeal of the good thing, but it was also the running away from the bad thing. And the two of them are like just connected in this deep way. And I think like that's part of the beauty of this meme and this idea is it's also it's just like, in a way, it's alluding to something profound about life, which is like the interconnectedness of like despair and joy.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like, yeah, we said there's nothing to come back from if it's never so over, but there's also nothing to be over. If there's nothing good in your life or in the world, then there's nothing to be over. There's, you know, there's nothing to lose. So yeah, these things are like deeply connected to one another. One thing that I don't want to imply by thinking about the world this way, I think there's a reading of thinking about things like this where it could almost feel like, well, nothing really matters then. You know, if it's so over, don't worry about it. We'll be so back. Or if you're so back, don't get too happy. It's about to be over again. And there's some wisdom in that for sure. I don't want this to come off as like a nihilistic sort of like, it all ebbs and flows and balances out in the end and it's okay and you don't have to worry about anything. It's just life. To some extent, I think that perspective is important. But I think like part of the genuine power of this experiential reality that is part of human life is that it does matter when things are over. And it does matter when things are back, like just inherently. It matters because it feels like it matters. And mattering is a feeling. Like if something matters to you, that's a feeling inside you. And feelings are responses to our environment. And when things are happening that are hurting us, it feels like it's over. So it's a real thing. There's this sort of centristy idea of like, oh yeah, we'll swing too far in one direction and we'll swing back and it all balances out in the end. And it's like, even if this pendulum is part of reality, that doesn't mean that it all balances out in the end. And sometimes we can go on trajectories that are bad. Like if you've ever, to bring another meme into this, have you ever seen that ratchet effect meme where like, oh, the people describe, oh, there's this cycle where right-wing politicians get into power, destroy public services, make things worse, etc. Then liberal politicians get into power and hold things where they are. They don't make things better. They just keep things where they are. You could conceptualize that as an it's so over, we're so back cycle, but like if the it's so over moments are more powerful than the we're so back moments, you can still be moving on an overall negative trajectory despite this. So I just think that in the it's so over moments, it's important to not just recognize that there is the potential for it being back, but to use the pain and horror of it being so over to push yourself and others towards working towards making it back. And even when we're so back, it's important to keep fighting because we want the overall trajectory to be rolling in a good direction. And there can be the it's so over moments and the we're so back moments, but like hopefully, ideally, in a society, in a world, in a life that's progressing in a good direction, it's less and less over every time and you're more and more back every time. That's kind of the ideal. You don't always work out that way, but yeah.
Yeah, because it's not, things feel so over, but it doesn't matter and you don't need to worry. Like thinking about the cyclical nature of human experience or even the political or historical trajectories, the worrying itself is part of the process. The worrying creates the conditions to create counter conditions of being so back. Like sometimes it's so over and we're so back can be something that happens to us, but it can also be something that we create.
Today's episode of Seriously Wrong is brought to you by We're So Bacchetol, the new miracle drug you can ask your doctor about today.
Oh, the banks repossessing my house, my kids falling behind in school and acting out, my golf game's falling off the map, and they pass me over for that promotion at work. It's over.
Here, try this doctor's prescription of We're So Bacchetol. Take one pill as needed whenever things are so over, and you'll soon find that you are so back.
Worth a try, I guess. And... yeah, I feel the same. That was my cell phone. Hello?
Hi, sir. There was a bank error in your favor, and it's looking like you're going to be able to keep the house.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you so much.
Dad, do you have a minute to talk? I was just thinking that...
Anytime, buddy. What's up?
You're right. Seth is a bad influence, and the grades are important. I'm going to straighten up and fly right.
That's incredible, son. Yeah, I'm proud of you. That's wonderful.
I'm calling from the golf course. Turns out that there was some warping on the field. You were right, and it wasn't your fault that you missed those putts, and we're going to be adjusting your scores. And also, I know your boss, and he says you got the promotion now.
We're So Back with We're So Back at All. Ask your doctor if We're So Back at All is right for you.
Side effects may include cramping, pooping, peeing, intestinal bleeding, intestinal peeing, sporadic unpredictable ejaculations, sweating and crying, new milk allergies, milk leakage, total milk loss, the philosophical realization that it being so over and it being so back are both artifacts of black and white thinking and not true states of the universe, insomnia, bloodshot eyes, cramps, and the haunting realization that no external success can ever truly compensate for the howling void within.
We're So Back with We're So Back at All. Ask your doctor.
And now We're So Back to our show.
I was looking for like quotes because I felt like there's some profundity underneath the surface of this meme. And there's like this ancient multi-tradition history of talking about these cycles and like the connection between sorrow and loss and despair and joy and ecstasy and success. And like one of the quotes that I think we can kind of fold into this that I really like is there's the, who said it? I should have looked this up. Pessimism of the intellect, optimism of the will. It's so over of the intellect and we're so back of the will. And I've always loved that quote because I feel like optimism is something that's built on this base of pessimism or like an evaluation of the negative of the situation is like, that optimism that you can have in that context that understands the place that you're starting from is the type of optimism that's powerful. And it's not the Pollyanna kind of optimism. Oh, anything, everything will be fine. Don't worry about it or whatever. It's like, no, we have to worry. There's things to worry about.
Yeah.
And we have to build the conditions for optimism. We need to be optimistic about what is possible. Like what are the possibilities here? Because I feel like potentialities are, this is a weird, not everyone might not follow me down this path, but I think potentialities are real. There's things that are possible and there's things that aren't. And there's things that just genuinely aren't possible. And then there's a spectrum of things that are possible. And then of those things that are possible, there's more or less...
desirable.
Yeah, more or less desirable and also more or less likely. And things that are sufficiently likely and sufficiently desirable is like that is... kind of what I try to orient myself towards when I'm building on this base of pessimism. So when things look bad and they feel over and that feeling is real, worrying and responding to that situation is a place that you can build strength and capacity and power to glance into the world of potentiality as a spectrum that is real, that refers to something that is not more than just fantasy. Like
right.
it's yeah. And like this, I don't know. Someone argued with me once when I said it. So that's why I'm second guessing. It was just one person though. But I think potentiality is real. Like things that are possible, it's not just a dream. It's related to the conditions that you're in and the spectrums of possibilities that cascade from the conditions are just in a meaningful sense in the present when you're talking about the future. They're a type of real.
Yeah, there is at the very least, there is a distinction in fact between things that could actually happen that the current conditions allow for, like in physical reality, and things that could not happen. There's possibilities that are not real, are not actually possible, and then there's ones that are. So however you want to phrase that, if potentialities are real, doesn't vibe with you, there's like, I think that's partially what you're getting at with that.
Yeah.
And like, I like this pessimism of the intellect, optimism of the will thing too, because the idea, of building where you want to go from where you're at, from a realistic assessment of where you're at. And sometimes the worse the place that you're at is, the potentials for where you can go become more clear, and your will to move in those directions becomes stronger. And like, you know, I used the example earlier of like a story beat where someone's about to be eaten by a shark. And like, if you're a while out for where you recognize that maybe about being eaten by a shark is a potential, you'd probably mostly be planning on like, okay, how do we avoid that from happening? How do we stay away from sharks? How do we do that? Like, but like once you're there, once it's like right by you with its big jaw open and like there's the lines moving you into its mouth, and I'm imagining this is an animated children's movie and they're being flown into a shark's mouth, then intellectually you have to recognize like, okay, we're like a few feet from this shark's mouth. There's no more avoiding this situation. We're in this situation. So then there's a type of clarity that comes with that of like, what's a real possibility here? Is there any way to get out of this? Maybe you can like, you know, swing yourself around on the shark's tooth, or like you have a bit of your clothing, you can do this, or there's like a thing you can grab onto, or like things become clearer in that moment that you wouldn't have known beforehand. You wouldn't be like, oh, we can just plan to do this thing if we're about to be eaten by a shark, because you're not in that situation. The facts on the ground aren't giving you the information you need to know what to do when you're in that moment. But when you are in that moment, then you do have those facts, and you don't have to worry about planning to avoid being eaten by the shark because it's already happening. You can just, how do I get out of this? And, you know, the panic of that, the it's so over of that, the sheer like terror that you would be feeling in that moment is like a huge motivating factor, gives you a lot of willpower. That's a very powerful combination. The combination of being in a horrible situation, being able to see the exact contours of what that horrible situation looks like, seeing it come to life, and that human impulse of like, no, fuck this, looking for the path out, and then having all the energy you've ever needed to push in that direction. Yeah, it's powerful.
Yeah. And it's like, to escape the shark's mouth, you first have to be grounded in the fact that the shark's mouth is genuinely, literally coming at you.
Yeah.
And like, that's the pessimism of the intellect, is I am about to die. if things keep going how they're going, I'm going to be eaten by a shark. And that's like a fact. And then, the optimism of the will is, I can avoid that by taking certain actions. And the same is true for, you know, on the political realm and the in personal life and a variety of places. It's like being there sitting like, oh, everything's going to be fine. It probably won't eat me. Like, sometimes that might work for you. Like, sometimes that might work. Like, you might get lucky. But it's really, that will, that drive. And so I just looked it up. It's a Gramsci quote, which I knew, but I didn't. When I read it, I was like, of course, Gramsci, the prison letters. How could I forget? There's, you keep a lot of stuff in your brain.
Oh, falls out again.
Yeah, or it's just not filed correctly. And when you try to pull it, it's not there. so that like, I don't know. It's actually genuinely like one of my favorite sentiments, I think, like in politics that I've encountered from any quote or any author that's been really clarifying to me. And so it's, it's so over of the intellect, we're so back of the will. And like another one, this is like a little bit, I think, less profound, but it's also just like it's like the most obvious comparison in terms of like the database of common sense in quotes. It's always darkest before dawn.
Right.
It's always so over before you're so back, which is also, but is, it's not without profundity. Like it's partially a way of, I think, negotiate, like that piece of wisdom is a way of negotiating with ourselves to accept, the darkness of night, the horrors, the pain of life, is to remind yourself that sometimes things get worse before they get better. And it's like, counteracting this human instinct to be like, well, things are getting worse now and it's taking up my whole perception and it feels like it's going to get worse and worse forever and then I'm going to die or explode and my family's going to be stolen and the planet's going to collapse on itself and so on. It's always darkest before dawn. I don't know if that's literally true in terms of like actual dawn, but as a...
Yeah, wouldn't it be the darkest, like kind of in the middle of the night?
I think it is. I think it is darkest in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
Furthest from dawn and from sunset. But I'm no expert, so do correct us if that's incorrect. Yeah, so... Yeah, actually on the self-salving framework of this, of like in the reassuring oneself in life, and it's hard to remember this, but something I think that you said, Aaron, when we were talking about this yesterday, is like, if it is so back, then it is a reminder in a sense that it actually never was over. Like, it feels over, and that's a real feeling, and we have to like honor our feelings and be present with what it feels like to be a human. But if it really was over, then it could never be so back. And the reality is, in every situation where it's so over, there's some way that you can be so back around the corner that it's possible. It's in the real realm of potentiality. Like, there's horrible things that can happen that you can never come back from in some way. So, like, it can be over in a really meaningful sense on a specific criteria, on a specific thing. And I don't want to...
Yeah, like your old relationship could be over and it's not coming back. It's over forever and that's just... but like the we're so back in that isn't like getting back with your ex could be a really bad idea in a lot of cases. The we're so back is like, you know, finding someone else who's a better fit.
Or, you know, getting your groove back and learning to love yourself, you know, like that's...
Yeah, totally.
And you go on a trip.
Having a single... learning to love yourself as a single person. Yeah, the way that things can come back isn't always going to be... if you think about this in terms of like growth and death and renewal and like, you know, at some point your life is going to be over and that'll like literally just be over. You're not going to be so back. Maybe if there's like an afterlife, but your body isn't going to be so back and probably not in any way. but that doesn't mean like, yeah, humanity is over or like the people who knew you are over or like the impact that you had on the world is over. Yeah, these things, certainly things end that don't ever come back, but by ending, they create space for other things.
Yeah, on that front, I don't know, I've thought about this before and I think it's really interesting, which is like humanity and life and all the flourishing of nature, all of the differences within ecology, all of the... Just like the beauty of the world, the things that we appreciate when you go in nature and there's different trees and different animals and different plants and flowers and stuff. These are all the products of this evolutionary process that we understand of like this random variation being filtered by conditions and so on. We've got episodes where we talk about this. Survival of the fittest episode is one. All of that, including the existence of humanity itself, is the product of mass continual death. Evolution doesn't work if animals live forever. Like, if our antecedents in the historical record of humanity from, you know, from the apes to, you know, through all the little buddies in the graph, Homo habilis and so on, you know, like all those creatures, all of our grandparents, they all died. And it was in their death that they made room for the next generation. It was in their death that they made room for the variation of the randomness of evolution. It was in their death that humanity, like that mass historic millions and million year trajectory of death, like life, but then also death, created the conditions for us. And if the first animals just lived forever, then evolution just wouldn't happen. Like there wouldn't be room for evolution to happen. There wouldn't be room for humanity to exist. And that's not a celebration of death by itself, but I feel like there's something important about that and like that's why this stuff, like why this kind of like wisdom of the cycles of nature and so on and like death leading to life and so on is so profound. It's captured the imaginations of so many people throughout history and it's become part of like the canon of wisdom in a variety of different ways. Yeah, like it's sad when people die, and it's sad when animals die, and it's sad to our experience that, you know, things come to an end. Your grandparents die, and your parents die, and then you die, and like, and then your kids die, and like, hopefully in that order. But there's like the space that's left by those people reaching the end and perishing, and are, that is part of the conditions of everything beautiful and valuable about the world. And it's almost like kind of a, it's almost like the closest category I can put it into is almost like a spiritual realization, although it's like very grounded to me in a materialist understanding of the universe and nature. But I feel like that is a useful, it's a useful idea to carry with us and to remember about the nature of life and the nature of, it's like, we could not be here and we could not be who we are without this millions of years trajectory of life and then death, life and then death, life and then death, you know, ecstasy and sorrow, ecstasy and sorrow, ecstasy and sorrow. And yeah, I don't know. I just find that really interesting.
Yeah, it's like taking a perspective outside of just yourself in order to contextualize something, you know, horrifying that nobody looks forward to, their own death or the death of their loved ones, in a way that can be, you know, not like, oh, you know, I'm totally fine with that now. Everyone I loved died, and but that's just making space for the next generation, for new things to flourish, and like that can be like one way to find some peace, find some comfort with it. I think it's a spiritual realization in a sense because of that, like taking this greater perspective outside of just like your own personal interest, like your own personal, like, you know, I'd like to not die forever and then just keep experiencing things, good things, bad things, blah, blah, you know, but it's probably not in the cards. So like, taking this broader perspective, this like human-wide perspective or earth-wide perspective or like even broader than that, can contextualize it in a way where you're like, ah, okay, you know, it's not, I don't like it still, but you can find some peace with it.
Yeah, isn't there a concept, and I've got this concept in my head, I think it's Taoist, like I associate it with like the yin-yang and stuff, which is like, it's like in the wise folder of my brain is where I keep this. is like part of like having peace in life is like to keep a little bit of happiness with your sadness and to keep a little bit of sadness with your happiness.
Yeah, that's, I think that's what the symbol partial, like that the good things contain a kernel of the bad thing. Like that's why the symbol is like the little black dot in the white swoosh and the little white dot in the black swoosh.
Yeah.
That's at least my, you know, I'm no expert on any of this, but my understanding is that's part of what the symbology is there.
Yeah, it's been a while since I read about that stuff. So it's all gone. But yeah, like it's true. It's like there is something, again, there's a profound thing to this. And like you keep a little bit of we're so back with your it's so over and keep a little bit of it's so over with the we're so back. And it's a way of like, that's like a piece of advice about how to navigate this world in a way that is peaceful to the human experience as possible. And the hard part of it is really to keep the it's so over when you're so back, because like it's appealing when it's so over to bring a little bit of it's so back with you because it's a relief.
Right.
But when things are going well and things are good, to also keep that little bit of it's so over with you is a way of keeping balanced and having a holistic perspective. So like remember when things are going well to remember that it can be taken away and like that also kind of like, yeah, like it's sad in a way, but also it's like part of being able to really like treasure when it's so back is to remember that there is this shadow hanging over you, which is that it will be so over again at some point.
Yeah.
And that there's arguments to make that the conditions of it being so over is already there. And
yeah, yeah. And I think it's like, I think it's psychologically healthy to keep these things in mind. You know, like black and white thinking is, you know, something that can get people into trouble a lot of the time. If you see things as like fully this way, fully that way, and there's no room for that nuance or that understanding, then like you can have these really high highs, but also have these really low lows. But if you're keeping the kernel of the other within each of them, then like the highs are going to be a bit tempered, and so are the lows. And that's like more peaceful. The high might not be as fun, but there's like a greater peace to that. And I think it also helps you triangulate better for like that greater trajectory that I was talking about, in terms of like, I think it's obvious why keeping in mind that it can be so back in an it's so over moment is beneficial. And it might be a little less obvious in the other instance, but like one of the problems with feeling like it's so back is that people breathe a sigh of relief and just like, okay, it's so bad, I don't have to worry about this anymore, we're so back.
Yeah, time to go to brunch.
Yeah, it's time to go to brunch. We got Trump out. Biden's here. He's going to take care of COVID. You know, maybe he's not like the best candidate ever, but like, I'm so tired of how over it's been for the last 4 years. We're so back now. Let's just take a break. Let's have a nap. It would have been really useful in those moments if people had in their mind's eye when Biden was first voted in what 2024 actually turned out to be like, or 2025, I guess, when he got sworn in.
I'm so glad Biden got in, and now it's just like, phew, we got Trump out. He's never coming back.
Yeah, no way he would ever come back. Like,
He's definitely not going to be reelected with a bigger mandate, and he's definitely not going to do worse stuff faster with less resistance. So I can just relax forever now. And we can go back to how things used to be, which is that you kind of tune out politics.
Yeah, there's a, you know, this moment right now is terrifying in a lot of ways, like the American political moment. But like, I also remember in 2021, Biden being sworn in and seeing that like apoliticism spreading, seeing people just like paying less attention, being burnt out on it, not caring, seeing like a lot of like left organizations and groups and candidates and things struggling for attention and for that energy just not being there. And that also being like sad, like there's like that relief, but like if you're not keeping in mind how over it can be again, how close we are to it being over once again, it makes those moments worse. It makes the next time it's over worse.
Yeah, I mean, part of the folly of the way that of thinking that way of thinking, which we didn't do, that's not us, but other people did. Shame on you. not that you're listening, is like, yes, I mean, it was a relief in the sense that like it felt bad and does feel bad to live in a world where Donald Trump from The Apprentice is president and doing a bunch of like racist shit, and it's natural to feel a relief when that changes. But then also like a deeper analysis of whether or not we're actually back would reveal that we were never back. Like,
yeah,
Biden was still a huge piece of racist shit himself. And Trump was a symptom of a system that Biden promised to maintain and did indeed maintain. So like having Trump in that office was clarifying to some people and being able to see things they hadn't seen before and connecting with people who are less political or more centrist and so on from a left perspective and having them see the left perspective more clearly. But that relief also with it brought a re-veiling of the things that Trump was helping to reveal and helped create the conditions for Trump to come back worse.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, if you thinking about it from like Trump's perspective, he sees 2020 as like the ultimate it's so over moment. Now that he's so back in his eyes, he's like pushing so hard on all these things. It's, you know, I've thought about it a lot since he got voted back in. Like, maybe it just would have been better if he'd won 2020. This flurry of executive orders and like intense deportations and attacks on trans people and women and like all this crazy tariff shit. I doubt most of this would have happened if it had just been a continuous term. This is him like reasserting himself in a crazy way. Obviously, not that I'm saying that like, oh, I really wish Trump would have won 2020. There's way more we're so backs that could have happened if Bernie had won and then we had 8 years of Bernie. We could have been way, way more back. The amount of over it is right now, I'm like, oh, it would have been better if it was a little less over 4 years ago instead of now. But
yeah, and like a lot of things, like the overness of term two Trump just creates the conditions of the new and better it's so backs in the future that we can only begin to imagine. So
despite, yeah, maybe there's something even better than my imagined 8-year Bernie term that we could be in the middle of right now that's about to start in 4 years.
Yeah, and this also, I mean, like in talking about the electoral realm and thinking about the vibe shift thing and like the kind of sense that, yeah, there was a feeling that I had, I think a lot of people had, that there was like this shift to the right happening that was kind of an unpleasant, uncontrolled, uncomfortable thing, like after this decade that was like really defined by mainstreaming of social justice ideas in a bunch of different ways. Like the fact that I really do think that feeling on the vibe shift was to a great degree an illusion. What people vote is not reflective of necessarily, it's not totally reflective of their values. It's also not totally reflective of their potential values, which is the most important thing in organizing. So yeah, on that note, I just want to utterly condemn and criticize any sort of centrist, liberal, or even social democratic party that capitulates to the feeling that people, the electorate, is moving towards the right based on faulty information. And in doing so, doing things like being willing to sell out our transgender brothers and sisters as a necessary sacrifice on the road to power, or being willing to sell out the environment or workers or things that are core to our values as the left and progressive folks. Like, I really think that that type of capitulation and cowardice, not only is it morally wrong, but it doesn't work. It harms not just broader social movements, but it harms you.
Yeah, I think a lot of the time they think that they're lessening these blows. But what I think it actually ends up doing is making the it's so over moments even worse because of that ratchet effect thing I talked about. Like, if things are becoming over when the it's so back moment we had was tempered by them pre-capitulating to all these things and like, oh, we're not going to try to push for this because clearly it's a right-wing moment right now. The public is on our side on this. They all just voted for Trump or whatever. We're not going to try to push for universal health care in America, or we're not going to try to push for social housing programs to actually deal with the housing situation in many major cities across North America and the world. We're not going to try to push for what's needed because, you know, look at how bad things are right now. Look at how over it is. The only way we can come back is to try and forge this middle path. But like what they end up doing there is just tempering the amount that we're able to come back. They take that energy to push for a we're so back moment and they direct it into something that's like half back or partial back.
Yeah, yeah. And if you get polling, like if you get polling, it shows people don't support Medicare for all enough. It's not our winning issue. You know, people don't support standing up for Palestinian people's lives as mattering because we have this polling that shows, you know, like people are uncertain about it or whatever examples you can think of. Like in politics, people are looking for leadership. They're not looking to someone who mirrors them back to them. It's not what voters even want. So it's like moral cowardice, but it's also strategic blunder because people are looking to political leaders to help them understand what's going on and help them understand how to fight back. They want people who will fight for them. They want people who are willing to put their necks out. They want people who are willing to say things that are right, even when they're unpopular. And the people who already agree with you will have your back 110%. And the people who are on the edge of considering agreeing with you will also be inspired by the organic movement, the organic discussions, the organic community reaction. So you have your advocates in community who say, oh, this is a party that's standing up for me and my values, the things I care about. They talk to their friends about that. We have all these middle of the road, low information, they're busy, whatever. It's like then that percolates into their universe. So it's not about being a thermometer measuring the room. It's about being a thermostat and setting the temperature.
Yeah, like so many people are like, oh, if the last thing they heard about universal healthcare, they responded to some poll on the phone where it was presented as, do you think it's good that Bernie Sanders wants to ban private healthcare and make it illegal for you to have health insurance? This is one way that polls frame Medicare for All in a way to try and get poll results to say that people are against it. They talk about like banning private healthcare, making your insurance illegal, this kind of stuff. Maybe the person who that's the last thing they heard is like, yeah, I actually don't like Medicare for All. But your job as a progressive politician is to make the case for why this works, to point to the examples of it working, to point to the outcomes that are better in places that have universal healthcare. You don't just say, oh, they've been misinformed by the propaganda of the other side, so now we have to meet the electorate where they're at this misinformed place. That's not your job. That's pre-capitulation.
And you are putting yourself forward as leaders, which means that people are considering whether to follow you. And yeah, you should be in tune with people. They should be in tune with where people are at. You should understand the situation. But if the situation where people are at is looking it's so over, then we need it so back of the will. And people will come along with you if you have courage, if you have moral clarity, and if you fight for things that people need, and you make the case for it, and you help treat elections and campaigns as an educational project to bring people up and to build capacity and build understanding for the future. And you can change politics by doing that. So I just want to utterly condemn and point the finger at these centrist politicians who think that they're playing a different game than they are because they're betting our lives on this game. And it's repulsive, the cowardice. It is repulsive, the self-interest. If you're talking about throwing people under the bus for your power, like if you're talking about cutting off parts of the coalition, cutting off our neighbors from the help that they need for your power, that is disgusting.
There's a lot in the world that feels so over. And now I'm not just talking about like this past election or these past few years. I'm talking about that bigger trajectory again. Decades and decades of declining social programs, declining membership in unions, declining power of the left in the overall political sphere. We could even talk about on an even larger scale than that, centuries of colonial aggression against the world and decades of human disregard for the climate. There are things that have been getting more and more over. There may have been smaller cycles of like, oh, you know, we're back on climate change a little bit. They signed the Paris Agreement. We're so back, you know, decades ago. And then nothing comes of that. And it's like, it's still so over. There's the cycles within cycles. But there's been, in a lot of areas, this greater trajectory of horror and things getting worse and worse. But within that horror, there is the potential for a movement in the other direction for, you know, they're never going to get rid of the cycle of it's so over, we're so back. But we can with the right energy and the right ideas and the right pessimism of the intellect and optimism of the will, we can come back from these things. There are solutions to the climate crisis. There are potentialities of a truly post-colonial world, or I don't know what you would call a world that is like, I think post-colonial has a specific academic meaning. That's not what I'm talking about.
Decolonial, I guess.
Or not undoes, but rectifies, tries to make better the horrors of a colonial history. There is the potential for a new political reality to set in where the potential of human flourishing on this planet is realized to a greater degree than it ever has been before. And I think, yeah, part of moving towards that is to understanding these cycles and how to navigate them and how to use them to our advantage and how to, when we're in the midst of them, whichever part of the cycle that we're at, whether we're feeling like we're so back and realizing that we need to keep pushing, even though it feels really good right now, it's not time to just go back to brunch, or during those it's so over moments, realizing that opportunity lies within this. There is the real potential for broad movement on that bigger trajectory to something much, much better. There's a real possibility, like you were saying, some possibilities are real. There's a real possibility for a vastly better society to come to be.
Yeah, no, and like, we're talking about feelings. Like, the feeling of things being so over is a real feeling. We have to honor feelings. And the feeling of things being so back is a real feeling. And we have to honor that it comes from a place in our cognition and that it's like part of our being. But yeah, like you were saying, you know, for indigenous people in the Americas, it's been so over for 600 years. The impact of colonialism on the Americas and on our culture is still deeply felt. It's still present. It still influences our politics. Our institutions are still shaped by it and were built out of the dispossession of indigenous people, the massacre of indigenous people, and the politics of racism and hierarchy that puts European lives ahead of indigenous lives. And it's similar in the Middle East, where you have a colonial project that's newer, where you're putting the lives of people in Israel ahead of the lives of Palestinians. I mean, yeah, and so on colonialism, I mean, it's been so over for hundreds of years, but there is a possibility of it being so back, of us building a society that addresses this wound, not just on indigenous people, but also on settlers, on the descendants of settlers and beneficiaries of the colonial system, is that we carry this wound with us. It's dehumanizing. We need to recognize how over it is in order to start building towards being so back. You mentioned also climate change is another great example. You know, these oil and gas companies, they knew as early as the 1950s that their product was setting us on a trajectory for environmental disaster, and they opted to instead fund disinformation instead of working to come to solutions that could affect us in the long term. And right now, emissions are up year after year. All of the mitigating efforts that we put into place are insufficient to lower the total amount of emissions. And we know that the planet has limits. The ecology has limits, and human life has limits. And on that trajectory, again, it's so over. And any glimmer of we're so back has been short-lived or illusory. Also, I think there's a democratic crisis. I don't know that we've ever had something that we can really call democracy because of the power of the rich. The disproportionate political power of the super rich is eroding our society. It's eroding our social fabric. It's dispossessing us of our right to participate in the system. And on that front, it too, unfortunately, is so over. And the totality of this system that we've inherited when it comes to, in particular, I mean, other things as well, but in particular, colonialism, political and economic inequality under capitalism, and the environmental crisis on all these fronts, which are extremely key to the future of our species, it is so over. It is currently so over. And so pessimism of the intellect, it's so over of the intellect, means really understanding that and grounding ourselves in that, that that is the scenario that we found ourselves in. The reality is, it is so over. It is still so over now, but it can, it could, and it will someday be so back. we can have an egalitarian society that serves everyone, that has political power distributed to the people rather than just the super rich and the elites. We could have a system that treats the environment and the planet with respect, that takes the logic of the lending library and applies it to the whole of property relations, and create a commune of communes where everyone's paid according to need, where no one goes without, and where we can save the planet. We can save each other. We can fight for our neighbors as hard as we would fight for ourselves. We can fix these many crises, and that is firmly within the realm of possibility. It is firmly a real potentiality that we can grasp if we fight for it. It's going to take some time and it's going to be hard, but it's going to be worth it.
Yeah, we have to recognize that the shark is about to eat us before we can see the way out of that situation. You know, if we're sitting here pretending that it's not true, that it's not so over, that all these things aren't so bad, then you obfuscate the path out of it. So let's take that home today. Let's think about this. Let's think about how over it is. And from that position, use our vision, use our imaginations and our optimistic wills to chart the course towards backness, towards being so back once again. It is on the horizon. It is a potential that we can aim for on the horizon and orient ourselves towards, orient our actions towards, and push to achieve, to live there. We can have nice things.
Yeah, we got this, guys. Let's do it.
We now go to Just a Regular Guy Living a Regular Life.
Oh, honey, I'm home from work and I've brought a big bundle of flowers and some chocolates for you, your favorite. Because I love you so much, darling. I just can't imagine being without you.
I'm leaving you.
What? What? Was it something I did?
I've been unhappy for years and you haven't even noticed.
I didn't even notice. What?
That's the problem.
What? I had no
idea. You can lay next to me in bed and not even notice.
Oh, I built my whole life around this. Oh my God, I'm alone. I go for a walk. I need to clear my head. I'll take a big soda. Don't even care anymore. Not diet. Regular soda.
One large soda and anything else? Cigarettes, lottery tickets,
yeah, give me sunglasses. Both. Give me both. Yeah. Quit for so long. Oh, tastes horrible. Light a second.
Here's your lottery ticket, and you can't smoke in here.
My God, I'm so sorry. I'm out of here. Here, keep the change. I don't even care anymore. Oh, it's one of those scratching wins. I'm just going to scratch the code to see if I won. I'm not even going to bother scratching them because I'm so depressed. I'm just going to scan it quickly.
Oh, wow, look at that. Looks like you won $1
million. $1 million? Holy, give me that.
Oh, wait. $1 million for life every year. Sorry, I read that wrong.
For life every year? My...
Hey, that's your lucky day.
It's my lucky day. It's my lucky day. It's my... Hey, you're beautiful.
Hey, look, it's that guy's lucky day.
Oh, my God. Beautiful child. Reminds me of being young.
What a nice man.
It's the best day of my life. Oh, it's windy. It's really quite windy. I should hold this lottery ticket tighter to my chest as I run, but things can't go wrong now. It's my lucky day. Wait, where is it? I just had it.
Did you drop that thing blowing away in the wind over there?
I'm gonna get it. I get it. Okay, it's in the stream, but I can still get it. Okay, no, it's moved into a bigger stream. Oh, they're building a bridge up ahead. They've got some highly destructive power tools. Oh, oh no! Ah! Oh my God! It's not supposed to go in there! It's shredded into pieces! Oh my God! $1 million for life?
Sir, please back away from the equipment.
I'm having a hard time processing this. It is so over.
Help me! Help! Help me!
She fell in! Get her!
Help.
Oh my God, a child is going being pulled down the river. She's being pulled towards the same machine that destroyed my...
I can't swim!
I'll save you! I got you.
You saved me!
He saved her!
It's a hero!
No, I'm not a hero.
Cheers for the hero!
I'm just lift him on our shoulders!
We need more people like that in the world!
Hi, I'm from the National Reporter. There's a new hero in town, and it's you. They're throwing a parade for you tomorrow. Any comment on your newfound, highly courageous public heroism that's turned you into a national figure? I was just doing what anyone would do. I
Oh! He's humble. He's better than us.
You should run for president.
Well, I guess I should keep my options open, but I've never thought of that before.
You've inspired millions of people around the country.
Millions of people around the country have been inspired by a local hero who saved a girl from unspecified heavy machinery at a lake. I mean, stream. But our new hero is being raked over the coals over uncovered past social media accounts disparaging the Italian community. Many saying our hero is not who he claims to be.
There's anti-Italian tropes, anti-Italian slurs, anti-Italian memes. Perhaps most offensively, an entire TikTok account with hundreds of videos of him doing an offensive Italian accent. I think we need to think about what kind of message it would send to our Italian children if this man was elected president.
Yes, everyone, I want to acknowledge these are 16, 17-year-old posts. They were meant with a dash of irony. But I do want to unreservedly apologize. I thought that, and I was wrong, but I thought that racism against Italians was okay. I thought that we had clearance for that, but I was wrong. I'll never be president. I'm ruined. It's over for me.
Hey, you remember me?
Sam and Tilda. I thought you...
I saw you on TV when you were saving that girl and running for president, and I just thought... I don't know, maybe if you were single, or you're probably not, but...
What happened to Branton? You guys moved to Turkey together.
Botched hair transplant surgery. We lost him.
You said that we were perfect for each other. You said that you wished that beautiful summer could last forever. You said that we were the right people, but it was the wrong time. I never thought I
would... Maybe now it's the right time.
Sam and Tilda, I...
As an Italian, I thought those jokes were funny.
And I have an Italian. I have an Italian partner. I can be president. I mean, sorry, I don't mean to be presumptuous. I don't know. I felt like we really had a connection back then. And I'm not trying to rope you into my president
thing.
You're
asking me to go steady?
Yes, I mean, Simatilda, if you're... My God, I've dreamed of this. I've repressed these dreams, of course, but I've dreamed of this.
And so the cycle of it's so over and we're so back continues on, fluctuating up and down and up and down, on and on, and so it goes. And it continued for him until, in his ripe old age, he was unexpectedly crushed by an anvil moments after accepting the Nobel Peace Prize for bringing about world peace.
Welcome to the great library in the sky.
Mr. What is, was, and ever will be, I already know your name.
That's right, the keeper of all truths, past, present, and future, and all possibilities which are real.
I remember this place, the universe where all universes are kept.
You've been here many times before and will be many times again.
Huh.
Would you like to take some time to reflect on your journey before being sent out for recirculation?
Yeah, I'd like that. Thanks, Mr. What Is, Was, and Ever Will Be. Good to see you.
Just doing my job.
Yes, you know, when I think of all the crazy ups and downs over the years, the...
Times when it was so over and when you were so back?
The marriage, the divorce, the loss, the gain, the serious bouts of addiction, sexiest man of the year, the betrayals, the sorrow, the pain, the loss, the rapture, the ecstasy, the joy, the... It was all connected. You know, if I hadn't lost that lottery ticket, that kid would have died. And if my first wife wasn't secretly sad for 6 years, I never would have reconnected with that old flame. It's all for something in some weird way, or at least it feels good to pretend it does sometimes.
Sometimes it's not until you can pull back and get a bird's eye view, see the whole painting up there on the wall, that you can really see the true beauty in the contrasts. The way the lights and the darks, the reds and the blues and the greens all play off one another to make a whole that is something more than the sum of its parts.
Yeah, what a life. Well, I can't wait to hop back in. Do you mind if I just get going? Like when you jump in the pool of the diving board, you like get up and go around and like here, you have to do your reflection on it. I reflect on it. But people just want to, like you just have this urge. You're like, I gotta get back in there. I don't belong here.
Sure, yeah, I'll just check you out here at the desk. Just hand me that your card there.
On to the next one?
On to the next adventure.
And for now, it's so over.
Thank you for listening to this, our episode, our first episode of the either 11th or 12th season of Seriously Wrong. We're not sure which, but we're happy you're here, and we appreciate you all.
Thank you very much for your time and attention today. We'll be back soon with more episodes. Feel free to, as always, leave comments in the comment sections and various places of the internet, or send us emails, and we'll have a little conversation on the Seriously Wrong Patreon. We'll talk about some of the feedback to this episode. And hey, when was the time that it was so over and then so back for you?